last half of the sixth verse of the 15th chapter of Luke, "Rejoice, rejoice with me, for I have found my sheep that was lost." This week and next, we're going to be dealing in a couple of different ways with the idea of smallness. Next week it will be smallness in the absolute sense, but today it's smallness in the relative sense. Smallness itself isn't really a very meaningful idea theologically. There is not a branch of theology dedicated to weights and measures. So, that's a pretty good clue that the idea of smallness in the two little parables we heard from Jesus this morning is meant to point us beyond those stories to something else. Let's just get one thing out of the way up front. From the stories themselves, most of us grew up thinking of these little parables as being the kind of lost and found department of the Bible. And I have sort of played into that with the title that I have given this sermon. If you're a really close reader of the Bible, you might even hear this morning's reading from Luke and be put in mind of another story from Luke. In fact, a story that only appears in Luke, the parable of the prodigal son. Remember how that story ends, with the father explaining to that bitter eldest child, "This brother of yours was lost, and now he is found." We heard that story way back in Lent, even though in the text of the Gospels, it immediately follows what we heard this morning. So these three ideas together, lost sheep, lost coin, lost child, seem to be all about losing and finding. Well, sort of. There's something else about these stories worth our reflection. And to see it, we're going to have to remember a little bit about the first economics class you ever took, which may also have been the last economics class you ever took, way back in Economics 101, pretty much right after we learned about the relationship between supply and demand and how each of those ideas could be plotted on a curve. Remember, we learned about the idea of marginal value. You know, I wrote that line and then realized I have two business school professors and one economics teacher, at least in this parish. So everything that follows proceeds on dangerous ground. Marginal value works like this. If you make one widget and it costs you $10 to make, you will probably want to sell your widget for more than $10. But if you make 1,000 widgets, it'll probably cost you something like $10 to make the first one, but about 10 cents to make the 1,000th one. The greater the size of the output, the lower the marginal cost of any next thing produced. And it also works the same way on the other side of the equation. If you are really hungry, and I have an apple to sell you, then you will probably be willing to part with a pretty large sum to buy the apple. At the little convenience store in the office building where I work, that would cost me $1.25, that apple. But if you already have 1,000 apples, then the marginal value of this little apple of mine to you is going to be a lot less than $1.25. You might even pay me $1.25 to take some of your apples off your hands. Marginal utility is a very powerful idea, even though economics class can make it seem profoundly boring. But it's actually something we grasp pretty much intuitively. That is to say, our reasoning brains are fine-tuned to the idea of marginal value. So now go back for a minute to the setup of today's gospel. And by the way, way back in Lent, when we read the story of the prodigal son, the lectionary makes us read the very same setup before we get to the story. The first three verses of the 15th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. In case you didn't hear them, they go like this. Now all the tax collectors and sinners were coming near to listen to him, Jesus, and the Pharisees and the scribes were grumbling and saying, "This fellow welcomes sinners and eats with them." So he told them this parable. Just in case we missed it in the first verse, Luke hits us over the head with it in the second verse. This is a story about marginal people. This is a story about people that are on the margins. Tax collectors and sinners. Yes, sinners. Could mean a lot of things, but at least it means them. Those people that we are not supposed to have anything to do with. The answer Jesus gives to this complaining and grumbling is a story about three different kinds of marginal value. And there is a kind of order to the stories. The first one is about one in 100 sheep, 1% of the sheep. The second one is about one in 10 silver coins, 10% of the coins. And the third one is about one of two sons, half of the children. Here are the economics of that. One sheep is worth a lot less than one silver coin. And one silver coin may be worth a lot, but the child is of surpassing value. So when you see it that way, you might think, well, I get it about the child. As for the woman and the silver, well, if the 10 coins were all the money she had, then maybe it was worth turning the whole house upside down for. But if she had other sources of income, well, she might have been able to put her time to more profitable use. But quite honestly, a shepherd who leaves 99 sheep unattended in the wilderness, as the text says, in order to go off searching for one that is lost, has failed to grasp the basic concept of marginal utility, and he should be fired, not honored. That is how the analysis of marginal utility reads these parables. And when you put it that way, it seems sort of ludicrous. Until you remember that the basic idea of marginal utility is the cornerstone on which we build everything from healthcare to tax codes to education to community policing to, well, the vast majority of public policy ideas. I work in a school of public policy. If you want your policy adopted, you are expected to be able to demonstrate that it operates consistent with the value of marginal utility. We take it as a given that some cases, some instances, some people will fall off the curve. We accept small losses in trade for relatively large gains. The power of the idea of marginal utility means that we are deeply conditioned to accept that trade-off. And Jesus is calling us up short on that. He's saying that there is no margin so small that it can be ignored, at least not in God's economy. Not half the family, not 10% of the savings account, not even 1% of the sheep. It's a nice idea. It's a sweet idea. Until you remember the setup again. This guy welcomes sinners and eats with them. That is the statement of people well qualified to calculate at the margin of who is worth worrying about and who is not. And at the extreme end of that calculation, friends, we have the example of 50 years ago today, when men filled with hate blew up a church in Birmingham, Alabama, to attack people who were not worth it at the margin. Jesus is saying that this very kind of thinking, this basic skill that has been so much part of our progress and our becoming more efficient. So much the part of the way we estimate value and make sound, rational decisions, that is part of the problem. In fact, it is evidence of a fundamental problem with us, our fallenness. So the challenge in these stories, whether it's about sheep or silver or sons, is the idea that at least for disciples, nothing is too small. No one is marginal. And that is easier said than done. It's not just that we are good at intuitive calculations of marginal value. It's that because we are so good at it, we instinctively create and valorize groups of people to fit with our skills of figuring on the margins. And we call this the power of reputation. We don't just discount people who don't think like we do, or believe like we do, or vote like we do, or have the same preferences and tastes and ideas and preferences between Starbucks or Peach that we do. We are suspicious of them. We assign moral motivations to their actions, which rarely have anything to do with how they actually think. And if you challenge our idea and actually spend time talking to them, we are not so sure about you either. No daughter of mine is going to marry into a family that goes to the 8 o'clock service. All humans do this. We do this. Jesus is teaching us that this very human tendency, this thing that we are hardwired to do, is going to be our downfall as disciples. Unless we see it in ourselves and consciously act against it. And the truth of that teaching may just be found in our increasing estrangement from each other, in our politics, in our communities, and maybe saddest of all, in the church. That is a profound loss. Because when we set people on the other side of our margins, we have declared that there is nothing we can learn from them, nothing we can share with them, no benefit we can realize from a connection with them. And of course, we only impoverish ourselves in coming to that judgment. So whether we are the shepherd, or the woman of the house, or the father of the children, or merely trying to follow God's call to us as disciples, it is not so much what we look for as why we look for it. We seek out those who are lost, who are marginal, who are neglected and overlooked, and even who are hated, exactly because in the economy of God, there are no small margins. And whenever we hear the grumblings of the righteous, doubting the worth or the value of some group of others, that is probably the best clue we will get to who it is we should be spending more time with. Amen.